Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
All right, so we've got Dr. Judy Jasek, the holistic vet, the cancer vet, with us today. And, you know, we got to have a vet talk to us about this recall, this Listeria and Salmonella. But first, before we do that, Dr. Jasek, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Enjoying my summertime in Colorado.
I know. We finally are in the summer. I was like, okay, we're not going to get a summer this year, but looks like it's here. So it's fabulous. But you know, we've got this crazy recall going on, and as you know, raw dog food companies are under attack, and they have been for a very long time. It's really funny because we used to be able to say, well, no raw pet food companies have had a recall, and it was all kibble food, right? But then the FDA started coming in, and they started saying, hey, we're going to test your food. And I sent out this letter yesterday, but let me back up, primarily because one of our suppliers had a voluntary recall. And I think that a lot of people have this misconception of what happens when you get a recall. I think that the thought is, oh my gosh, there have been dogs that have been sick, there have been dogs that have been dying, and so now they're going to go in and recall this food. That is not the way it works. The way it works is they just walk in your plant. They just walk in your plant and they say, hey, we're here, and we're taking this sample. And I've seen the results of many samples that say positive, negative, 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 negative. But they'll still make you do a recall because they have a zero tolerance policy. And I sent out this information yesterday. It was a great article from Dogs Naturally that says recalls, logic versus fear. And all of you that are listening today, I want you to go to Dogs Naturally magazine and put in the word recall in the search, and you're going to get this article, logic versus fear. And I loved this. And I had Dr. Marty Goldstein on the podcast not too long ago. In here, they quote Dr. Marty Goldstein is saying, where is it what he said? He said, and I love this, if you don't want to get salmonella poisoning when feeding your dog a raw diet, don't lick their butts. Don't lick their butts. Now, I don't know, Dr. Jasek. I don't really want to know if any of my customers are doing that. You know, that's just not something I want to know. Mm-hmm. But basically, these recalls are more about people than they are about pets. And it was funny. I think we have to put it in perspective for people. So the FDA does not believe that raw foods are consistent with their goal of protecting the public from significant health risk, particularly when such products are brought into the home or used to feed domestic pets. So they have this idea that they put out there that raw food's going to kill everybody, every person. So I don't know how we make our own chicken or our own burgers. And the CDC also reports that in 2009 to 2010, wait for it, everybody, wait for it, 23 people were killed by Listeria, Salmonella, and E. coli combined. And to put that in perspective, the article goes on to say that NBC reported that in 2013, a record low of 23 people were killed by lightning. So the article basically says, you're about as likely, you, mom and dad, pet parents in the home, to get salmonella as you are to get struck by lightning. Get salmonella from your dog's feces or get it from them licking you. So does it make any sense to you that we have all of these, I tell you what made me so sad, Dr. Jasek, not only that this is just one big hassle for everyone, and you were asking me what kind of phone calls we got. One of the biggest concerns that we had coming from our veteran feeders was whether the manufacturers were going to have to go HPP.
Mm-hmm.
That was a real frightening thing for them because we, you know, we distribute a pure raw dog food. And as you have seen with some of the other companies that have been hassled by the FDA, because this costs money. You have all of this
food. Oh, yeah.
All of this food. We had just received a shipment, so we had to send back all of it. Now, all of these animals have been slaughtered for naught. We have to throw it away. Send it back, all because of this silly recall that we have from the FDA that has a zero tolerance policy. So to help people, Dr. Jasek, what, you know, because a lot of people that we said, look, if you want to return your food, return your food. We're going to give you a full refund or a refund for the used products. And we had some people that kept their food and that from the previous delivery. And some people, I would say, were making up things in their mind. So if they saw that the dog was just not interested in the food, and I hear people use this word, he was lethargic, then they think that he has this Listeria or Salmonella. How would you determine if a dog has Listeria or Salmonella?
Well, first of all, and I totally agree with, like, you know, Dr. Goldstein and the statistics you're quoting, that these are actually rare, just because the, you know, definitively diagnosed cases, which actually require like a fecal culture, you know, you have to be doing lab tests. You can't just do a presumptive diagnosis. And I actually see this done a lot. And I think it's really important that if people are being told this, that they ask their veterinarian, well, how did you determine that my pet has salmonella or listeriosis? Because a lot of times I see people go in, their dog maybe has a little soft stool, they tell the vet that they're feeding raw, and it's got to be salmonella, it's got to be from that raw food, and they don't even do any testing. So there's no proven cause and effect. Raw feeding just gets vilified and, you know, without any basis. And if a dog did have one of these diseases, which tend to occur, you know, you stated that it was like 23 people that got these diseases. What that means is that because these bacteria are out there, we don't live in a sterile world. So, you know, like for the FDA to say, oh, we got zero tolerance, there can't be any bacteria. That's absurd in my mind. It's living food. There's going to be some bacteria. You think about a wolf pack kills an elk. That carcass lays out in the sun for days with all kinds of critters feeding on it. They're not dropping dead. So this idea that we have to be feeding sterile food is absolutely absurd, in my opinion. And if a dog were to have like a serious bacterial overgrowth, they would be a lot sick, not a little off. You know, this time of year, I hear lots of people say, my dog's a little lethargic. Well, you know, here in Colorado, it's in the 90s, you know? Yeah, I don't feel like doing a lot in the heat. You have to think, you know, a little bit logically about what's going on. Sometimes they don't eat as well in the heat either. Their appetite goes down. They get warm and, you know, their body tells them, hey, I need to, you know, skip some meals. So you have to pay attention to what's going on. But a serious, like if these bacteria really took hold and there was a serious overgrowth that was actually causing symptoms, they'd be really sick, like, you know, blowout diarrhea and, you know, that type of thing. You wouldn't have to talk yourself into, okay, well, maybe it's the food. And I agree. I think it's our sometimes human nature to, you hear something like, oh, well, there was this recall. And then you start kind of subconsciously looking for things like, oh, well, you know, my dog didn't, got a little warm on our walk, didn't want to walk as far today, you know, things like that. It's just not realistic that, you know, the cause and effect is just not always there. And I think that as far as the safety factor too, it's like you mentioned, Dee Dee, you know, so except for people that don't eat meat, that don't bring meat into their household, but anybody that consumes meat for the people in the household consume meat, that grocery store meat actually has more tolerance for bacteria than the raw dog food company. So you're bringing meat with more bacteria in to your house and cooking it for your family, then you're bringing in, you know, then the bacteria that's allowed in your pet's raw dog food or cat food. You know, the difference is, you know, the grocery store foods are presumed that they're going to be cooked and that that bacteria is going to die off, but you're still handling the raw meat. So to say, oh, raw dog food is so unsafe, actually the grocery store meat is less safe if you're looking at bacterial content. But what do? You do safe handling. You know, you don't contaminate, if you're cutting raw meat, you don't use the same raw meat to cut up vegetables, or you don't use the same knife to cut up vegetables for your salad without washing it. You use different utensils. You wash everything really carefully. When you're feeding your pets, you wash the bowls after eating. You wash your hands. You don't, you know, if you're picking up your dog's, you know, poop outside, you pick it up and then you wash your hands before you eat something. That's pretty much just common sense. You know, I think it's so absurd that people are going to get deathly ill because they are, you know, they're touching their dog that eats raw food. It just doesn't even make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And it really does show me that I've got to do a better job of helping to educate my pet parents, because not only are we being scared by the recalls, then the vets are jumping on board. Okay, a lot of your vets that are anti-raw, they are jumping on board with this. And you were talking about doing a fecal. Well, you could still get a fecal test done and it comes back and it says, okay, there's evidence of salmonella in the fecal. But like you said, it's at what level? So I was asking our daughter, mm-hmm. who's a vet, yesterday. I said, all right, at what level would a dog, you know, how much salmonella is pathogenic? Which strain is pathogenic? Because there are 2,400 different strains of salmonella. All right. So if you do a fecal test and your dog has salmonella, maybe it's one that's not pathogenic. Maybe it's one that's just out there, right? So these are the things that we cannot just stop at. Oh, yes. My dog's poop was tested and it had salmonella in it. Okay, well, what kind and how much? And who cares if it's one of the other ones? Because it's in kibble food too. And I think that this is what people don't understand. But I didn't finish my statement here. She said, I don't know. She said, I don't know at what level it would be. And I'm not sure that anyone knows what level it is that would be, you know, deadly or that harmful to a dog. You've got to send it off to one of the labs, IDEX, one of those, and then it's very expensive. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to cost the pet parents some money. And so I think that that's another thing, Dr. Jasek, where if they don't have to spend the money and they could just get this diagnosis that says, yes, my dog has salmonella, then bada bing, bada boom, they have their answer. And that's not fair. And
right,
like you said, there's it's negligence.
Yeah, and there's a lot of individual variation too. So, I mean, I agree with your daughter that, like, well, how much salmonella does it take? It's going to vary with the individual. And, you know, even if you tested it, like, we sometimes test dogs, you know, positive with Giardia. You know, Giardia is a microorganism that lives in the water, and it can, and you know, it's spreading the fecal material of wildlife. And you can pick that up in a stool sample in a dog. And if I get a positive Giardia, but that dog is asymptomatic, I don't treat. I let the body handle it, because even though the organism is there, the body is handling it. If we have rip-roaring diarrhea, vomiting, dog not eating, well, then that's a different situation. But I see dogs that's positive for Giardia all the time that have normal stools, so it means that there's, you know, potentially been some exposure to the organism, but the fact that they don't have any symptoms means their body is handling it. And it's the same thing with these contaminants. So they pick up some contaminants on the food. When you have a healthy carnivore digestive system, you know, and in a dog that's eating raw in particular, the acid level in their stomach is high. The pH is very, very low. So most any bacteria that they eat, they're going to be killed in the stomach. They're not even going to make it back into the intestines. And that's the way dogs are actually designed to eat. They're designed that they could go out and eat roadkill. I mean, what do you think coyotes eat? They're scavengers. They're just eating whatever they can find. They're not dropping dead, you know, from bacterial infections. And you think that those foods are not just full of bacteria. So even if you picked up these bacteria, I think if you look at the animal and how are they handling it, and there's an excellent chance that the dog's body would be able to handle it. And it's like you said, with so many different strains out there, and only a few of which are actually pathogenic, interpreting those results would be really, really challenging as far as determining actual cause and effect.
Well, and I asked the second part of that question, and I said, what is the benchmark for salmonella in kibble food? Is there a benchmark? Have we tested kibble food? And our daughter said, I've never tested any dog that's on kibble for salmonella, because it doesn't even come up. You know, they don't think that. It's like, I don't think about that. And I think what really angers me and angers so many people in the raw food industry is how many years, Dr. Jasek, how many years has the FDA allowed aflatoxins, molds, all these cancer-causing ingredients into kibble food? So they've allowed this forever. They've known that this stuff is not good. Biodiesels, phenobarbital, mm-hmm. right? That stuff is
right.
And they only took that stuff out when dogs actually did die. And I would venture to say there's still some, you know, stuff in there today. Obviously, the ingredients, take a look at them, they're horrible. So you have to follow the money, people. Follow the money. And mm-hmm. I don't know what some pet parents think. Do they just think that these raw pet food companies have just started this business with no care for your dog at all? And that they're doing something. I mean, maybe there are. We certainly aren't that, and our manufacturers aren't those companies. I'm not saying that there may not be some of those companies out there that are doing it simply for profits. But I feed my dog this food. I am not going to do anything that's going to harm my dog. So it's just, I just want our pet parents to really get educated. And I don't know if people know about the Freedom to Feed petition that is going around. So Answers Pet Food is out in the pet food stores, and they have been hit by the FDA as well. But they are fighting back. Now, what you have to understand is that some of these manufacturers are afraid to fight back. They don't know how to fight back. They're not certain what their rights are. That is starting to happen. But Answers decided that they are not going to stand by and allow our right to choose how and what to feed our pets to go away. So they are mobilizing a fight against the FDA. And you can find it at freedomtofeed.info. Okay, freedomtofeed.info. And you can read about how they are really trying to stand up against the FDA and to help us fight for healthy, safe pet food. Okay, this doesn't mean that you have to have fed answers or that you're an advocate one way or the other of their food. It's just basically saying, look, we have to have somebody who has big bison balls to stand up to the FDA so that our raw pet food choices don't go away. Because again, these recalls cost our manufacturers bukus of money. They cause disruption. And so this is why some of them have gone HPP. And if you're not familiar with HPP, it's high pressure pasteurization. And I want you guys to Google that. You got to get educated if you're going to feed raw. Okay, you got to get educated, because if you're not, every one of these little recalls are going to scare you to death, going to scare you back to feeding kibble, and you're just going to be blown every which way. So get yourself educated. Okay, so that being said, Dr. Jasek, I have had, I don't know if you guys can hear that ding. I've got to try to get that ding off. Some people who have texted me or talked to me at the warehouse about these different things that vets have said in regards to taking advantage of this recall. In my opinion, that's what they're doing. So I had one of my customers the other day who took her dog in because he was lame. He was limping pretty bad. And he was diagnosed with elbow dysplasia. And the doctor actually said to her, I want you to consider, because of this elbow dysplasia, to stop feeding raw. And So first of all, would you just explain what elbow dysplasia is? I think a lot of people know that word dysplasia because of hip dysplasia. What is elbow dysplasia, and how in the world would that be related to the raw diet at all?
Yeah, that's really a stretch relating it to the raw. So dysplasia in any joint is typically a genetic malformation. So in the case of hip dysplasia, it's that the joint does not form correctly. And this, you know, the pets are born this way. Now it can change a little bit as they grow, but typically it's more of a genetic issue. And so in the elbow, it's the same thing. You know, the elbow joint, there's lots of areas where you've got the humerus, the big, you know, arm bone coming down, and the radius and ulna. There's lots of little areas where those bones articulate, where they join together. And if you get any one of those little areas that isn't formed right, you're going to get a joint that doesn't move smoothly, doesn't function smoothly. We'll get arthritis. Sometimes you get areas where the cartilage does not form correctly, so you don't get that fluid movement. You can get little bone chips, little bone spurs forming, things like that. And as far as relating that to raw, I mean, that's almost laughable in my opinion. And the only thing I could think that a veterinarian would use as a basis, and this is being completely uneducated in nutrition, would be protein content. Because there's a school of thought out there that because you're feeding this meat-based diet, that the protein level is sky high, which isn't true, because we have, you know, the adequate moisture content. The actual percentage of protein is not sky high. I think what happens in the mind of somebody that's not educated in nutrition is they equate the percentage of meat in the diet with the percentage of protein. So like, oh, well, this diet's like 90% protein because it's all meat. And that's not the case. But what I am going to guess is that they took that misinformation and said, oh, well, it caused the dog to grow maybe too fast. I don't know how old this dog was, but if they said it, this is something that's usually diagnosed at a fairly early age. So it caused them, all that protein caused them to grow too fast and cause this malformation of the joint somehow. Because that's been in the commercial kibble industry, you know, you see these puppy formulas where they, for large breed puppies, where they'll like restrict the protein content a bit. And, you know, the big problem is that it's just unhealthy food to begin with that causes inflammation. So if you're going to get any joint issues from feeding a particular food, you're going to be way more likely to get them from kibble because it's so inflammatory. And especially if it's carb-based, if you're going to mess up the growth in a puppy, in my opinion, feed them, a bunch of carbs that really mess up the normal growth. A raw dog food is a species appropriate protein. And then when you add in the bone and you add in the fat and they're getting their, and with the organ meats, you're getting a complete nutritional complement there. And that's exactly what they're meant, you know, to be eating to grow properly. So that's just a stretch. Like I said, it's pretty laughable.
Well, and she was just so upset. And I said to her, tell me what is upsetting to you? Because she basically told her vet, look, I didn't come in here for nutritional counseling. I came in here because my dog is, you know, limping, he's lame, and I want to know what that is and how we can fix it. And she was very upset about that. But I think when I really look at this and when I, you know, think about all the stuff that I talk about in my motivational leadership talks that I do for corporate America, you have to really look at what is it that causes us to get so upset when somebody has a differing opinion, when we absolutely know that what we think. And I said to her, I said, is it that you're afraid that maybe you're wrong, you know, that you don't know everything that you need to know about the raw diet and it's frightening you? And I think that's what it is for our pet parents. And that's why this education is so important, because you've got some, it's not logical to go to a vet who has spent $250,000 to get their degree, who has spent enormous amounts of time to get their degree, who is out in the world with the sign that says, here I am, your vet, and the vet doesn't know anything about nutrition. That is not logical to our pet parents. And so who are they going to question? Not the vet. They're going to question themselves. And mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And I would actually encourage people to question your veterinarian. So I hear that. And if I was talking to that veterinarian, I'd be like, interesting. So tell me more about that. Where did you get that information? What makes you say that? And where does this, you know, how are you making this link between the raw diet? It doesn't even have to be confrontational. Just say, I'd like to know more about that. And a lot of people don't question that. And I get there's an emotional reaction to, oh my gosh, hip dysplasia, my dog, or elbow dysplasia, my dog may need surgery. And so there's an emotional reaction there, which sometimes we don't think as clearly and logically as we would like. But I think people need to be questioning their veterinarians. Where are you getting this information from? Because I bet any amount of money that most veterinarians, they do not have a solid foundation for these statements whatsoever. And if they're questioned, I think, and, you know, made to think about it a little bit, then maybe they'd be like, oh, well, maybe that, you know, doesn't make sense. You know, but I think people need to question instead of just, you know, jumping back and coming back and blaming the raw dog food company. Ask the veterinarian, where did they get that information? How much nutritional training have they had? What is their background? You know, what in their background makes them qualified to even make that statement? And just start asking those type of questions. And I think people will be kind of shocked by the answers they get.
Well, it was funny because she said, look, I'm not pulling my dogs off raw, because the vet said, I think you need to really seriously think about pulling them off raw and putting him on this Hill's Science Diet. And then he said, but I don't want you to go Google and read all the negative stuff about Hill's. Oh, you mean the vitamin D toxicity thing? And she said, so you're saying that I need to pull my dogs off of raw for this elbow dysplasia and get a prescription for my dog's food. Where would I get that prescription? Oh, from me. Oh, okay. So I can only get this from you. Yes. I can't get this off of Chewy.com. I can't get this from my whatever supplier I want. No. And so she said, no, that's not going to happen. So she was so angry. And she was just very frustrated. And I said, well, get a different vet. Now, the problem is that a lot of people like their vets. So they try, it's a tough line because they want to go to a vet that they like and they trust in other circumstances. Mm-hmm. But by and large, I think that you just have to know that nutrition is not going to be something that they really understand. But here's my problem, Dr. Jasek. If you don't understand nutrition, how can you treat an animal? I mean, I don't understand that.
Well, I think the vets think they do understand nutrition because what they're taught is that the best thing to feed are these prescription diets. So your Hill's, Royal Canin, Purina, I believe has a prescription line. What veterinarians are taught, they're not taught nutritional principles. They're taught to feed these foods. And so they think that is the best they can do. And these, you know, you mentioned before, follow the money. These pet food companies are huge and they're owned by mega corporations like Mars and Colgate Palmolive and Nestle. I mean, they're not a small pet food company like the raw companies are, you know, much smaller companies that and what they're doing is hard. It's a hard business to be in. They're doing it because they have the best interest of the pets at heart and they want to do what's better. It's way easier to do some processed kibble and just throw whatever you want in it. That's cheap to process and you don't have to freeze it. That's a way easier way to produce food. The raw dog food companies are doing what they do because they believe that it's better. These big corporations producing these dog foods, their food production is so cheap. And all their money goes in. I mean, it's cheap in that it costs them very little. They're putting all their money into marketing, and giving money to the vet schools so that the vet schools teach their veterinary students to feed their food. It's a brilliant marketing scheme. And the CEOs of these companies are not sitting in their offices wondering what they can do to best improve the health of pets. They're looking to improve their bottom line. End of story. That's what they're in. They're so far removed from the front line, you know, the people in power in these companies making the decisions, you know, like, okay, ingredient A is starting to cost us too much. How can we cut corners and put something less expensive in there? And that's what they're looking at. They are not looking at the health of the pet, but the veterinarians are taught that this is the best, that these are the experts, that these companies are the experts in nutrition and they just need to follow their advice and they make it so easy. You know, Hill's has all the letters, the ID and the KD and the LD and the HD, and you know, just you get a handy little chart and okay, there's liver disease or intestinal disease, you know, you just pick the right letter and send that out the door. You don't even have to think. And I don't think they want veterinarians thinking about nutrition. They just want them selling their food. That's all I think probably most veterinarians do think that they're doing the best they can based on what they're taught. But what I find frustrating is why they don't develop a curiosity. So they see people coming in and feeding raw. Why aren't they curious enough to learn about it? I mean, that's what I did. I was trained the same as every other veterinarian that you see these prescription diets, but because I was a little more open-minded, I started getting more and more clients that were feeding raw, and I'd look at these dogs, they were just doing fantastic. I'm like, okay, there's something to this. And I started asking questions. I learned from my clients. I learned from wherever I could, you know, people that had experience feeding raw and what were they doing and what was working and how can I learn more about this? And what I don't understand as a medical professional, how can you not have that curiosity to learn, to speak from a position of being really uninformed? You don't know, you're just making assumptions, and not even have that curiosity to reach out and learn. It completely baffles me that somebody that's really interested in medicine and wanting to do the best for pets would not be interested in maybe learning about something that could be beneficial.
And that's why I encourage all of you listening today to do a phone consult with Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K. You can go to cancer-vet.com and sign up to get a phone consultation. If you have some questions about a diagnosis or whatever your dog's going through, it doesn't matter where you are in the United States. You got a phone, don't you? You can get to Dr. Jasek, okay? Now, just to put this in perspective of how big, you were talking about these food companies that own pet food. Mars, they are $18 billion. Nestle's, $13 billion. Smucker's, $3 billion. Hill's Pet Nutrition, $2.5 billion. Diamond Pet Foods, $1.5 million. And then General Mills, who owns Blue Buffalo, is almost $1.5 million as well. All of these are bees. Billions, people. So yeah, when it comes to the raw pet food industry trying to fight back, we need your help. We really need your help. We need you to sign petitions. We need for you to write your congressman. You need to speak up. And the first thing you need to do is stop being so afraid, because your fear is driving this HPP market. The fear that your dog is going to get sick, or you're going to get sick, or your child is going to get sick, or whatever. Please get educated, or your right for fresh pet food, species appropriate diets will be no more, and you will be forced to put them together yourself. And I will tell you that the reason that this industry has grown is because people don't have time to do that, nor do you have the ability to source 3 different proteins, 3 different types of organs. If you think you do, try that for a month and see how that works for you. Because I'm going to tell you, I have well-meaning pet parents that start out doing that, and they come back in about a month and a half and say, all I'm doing is making dog food. I have no time to do anything else.
Yeah. Well, and I'd like to just add to Dee Dee that when I heard about the recall, because I want people to know that I practice what I preach, I didn't even blink. I wasn't going to send any of my food back. My concerns were, oh, am I not going to be able to get the blends I want now for a while because of, you know, the recall, and they stopped production for a bit. And, oh my God, I hope they don't go HPP, because if they do, I would look for other sourcing. That is what would cause me to change companies where I source my food from for my own personal pets, because the HPP destroys the nutrition in the raw that we're going after. You know, it kills bacteria, but it denatures proteins, and it destroys so many of the benefits that are the reason that we're feeding raw in the first place. I didn't even think about sending the food back, because I just know how the recall system works. I'm like, I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about getting this food to my pet, but I'm worried about, okay, I might have to get some different blends, which is, you know, no big deal. And oh my God, because I know the pressure, and I know how much it costs these small companies to do a recall. And oh my God, I hope they don't start to do some other kind of processing that isn't going to sit well with me. Well, so I just want people to know that I have this, I don't just say this is the way I, you know, feed my own pet.
Well, and I'll give you that answer right now, because we heard from them yesterday and they said, if we have to go HPP, we will close shop. So that is not going to happen. Yeah. You will either not have access to that manufacturer's product, but they will not go HPP. And you have to understand that getting the equipment for HPP is extremely expensive. So it's not only that, but it's, what are your beliefs? What are your values? How do you view? Can you sleep at night producing a food that, you know, you have been, rallying against? I think it'd be very difficult to do that. So they're not going to do that. You just won't have access to the food. So, okay, I've got one more question that I want to run by you, because this one just blew me away, and then I'm going to let you go. But this also has to do with some of the silliness that vets say. So I got this from one of our customers who says, do you know anyone that feeds raw and is dealing with heart problems with their dog? My dog had an echo done today, an echogram, and they found an irregular heart rate, slower than normal, and his sinus nose has a scar, node has a scar tissue on it. They want us, the vets, to put him on Royalcanin temporarily to rule out diet-related issues. So I couldn't make the connection there. Can you?
No, not at all. I don't even know what they were thinking outside of, again, they just don't know. They don't know about raw. They don't know that. I mean, and when you want to talk about things that have been linked to heart disease, like taurine deficiency, taurine is an amino acid that in more highly processed foods has to be added back in. It's found naturally in raw meat, and especially in the organ meat. So that particular deficiency would be highly unlikely in a raw fed dog. And no, I mean, I can't think of any way in which, you know, a heart condition like that would be linked to raw feeding. And I think the dog, if they go on a, you know, Royalcanin diet, it would just, you know, make it worse. Probably because those diets are so inflammatory, and I'm guessing they're kind of playing off of this digestive cardio or dilated cardiomyopathy, linked to the grain free. So they're thinking, well, okay, maybe there's a dietary link here. Let's do the diet that we've been taught. Like I think, or that we've been taught is the safest and the best, and let's feed that just in case this evil, you know, raw food is causing a problem. But no, in my mind, that's just as absurd as the link to the elbow dysplasia.
Well, and then the next day I get this, and she says, good news. The slow beating heart rate appears to be from the sedation they gave him during his testing on the.
Oh, geez. For the echocardiogram.
Right. Yeah. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? And she said, the EKG today showed a normal heart rate. And so I'm just like, that shows you right there. It makes me so angry. And I have to wonder, Dr. Jasek, will there ever be a time that, you know, you could really file a grievance against your vet and say, get yourself educated. This is ridiculous. Some of the stress that they are causing, these non-educated vets, the stress that they are causing on our pet parents is enormous. And the rabbit holes that they send them down is crazy. So you get someone who goes in, let's say you go in, you get this sedation. They say, okay, you've got the slower normal heart rate. You know, we've got something wrong with the heart. So now, They tell you that they want you to feed Royalcanin, and maybe you don't go back and get this follow-up. And forever in a day, you start feeding Royalcanin. to your dog because you got this wrong diagnosis. And I see this all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's absurd that, I mean, that, I mean, when you said that about the sedation, it's like, well, duh, like, okay, any veterinarian should certainly know that, you know, any kind of sedative is going to affect the heart and the heart function. So why are you doing an echo on a sedated animal in the first place? I mean, unless, you know, I mean, typically they can be done unless the animal is just really, really unruly. Typically it's not a problem to do them without sedation, and you're going to be changing the heart rate. So why didn't they mention that? Like, they jump right to the diet. They don't even happen to mention the fact that the dog was sedated. It's just, it's like, what are you thinking? I can't even, you know, I hear that stuff and I just shake my head. And, but you know what is sad, the sad thing in the profession is that, you know, people could write a letter to the state board and say, you know, I got this information from my vet and I didn't feel like it was accurate and led me down the wrong road. But the sad truth of the matter is that feeding these prescription diets in the veterinary profession is considered standard of care. So what the board will do would be to review records and say, okay, were these recommendations in alignment with what we consider quote unquote standard of care? And the prescription diets are considered standard of care. So then the veterinarian would, you know, I mean, if you write a letter, if you know, if the board has to investigate, if somebody writes a letter about a particular veterinarian, they ask the vet for the records and all of that. But as long as they're following what's considered standard of care, then everything's fine.
Blows my mind. And I asked, I said, where did you go to get this? And she said, CSU, Colorado State University.
Oh, no kidding. Wow. Yeah. So, well, there, you know, and let's again, you know, follow the money. Do you think that these pet food companies are not making, I mean, well, the big conglomerates, the multi-billion dollar companies are not making some, you know, contributions to the vet school to encourage them to, you know, recommend their foods? You better believe they are.
Sure. And I think that that's just what is really tough for pet parents to get their arms around, get their heads around. So again, I think that you want to learn how to question your vet. And I also think that you want to, if you're going to feed a raw diet, you need to be working with a vet like Dr. Judy Jasek, who is a raw feeder, who studies this, who has the open mind to say, okay, well, maybe what I learned, maybe what, you know, I was taught is not the be all end all. These are the people that you want, I hope, to be taking care of your pets. So how do you get in touch with Dr. Jasek? It's cancer-vet.com. Now, she's not just a cancer vet, but to me, that's like the highest level, right? You get a dog that has cancer. This is a very serious situation. So she's really looking at the gut and everything that's going on. But you deal with so many different pets. I mean, allergies, skin disease, everything. So vaccinations. So please get in touch with Dr. Jasek. I mean, Dr. Jasek, your phone consultations are $150. Do you know how cheap that is compared to going and going and going and going down these rabbit holes, buying all these prescription meds that are just possibly and more than likely furthering your dog's lack of nutrition and lack of ability to be able to fight off any further disease? Again, please go to Dr. Jasek's website, and we're going to be doing these podcasts. We'll be doing more webinars. Go to my website, rawdogfoodandco.com. Dr. Jasek is on my preferred providers page. Take a look at our feeding chart and facts page. Also, all of the great food that we have on the website right now was not involved in the recall. That food will be coming back soon, but I want you to take a look at all of the top quality stuff. All of the chicken there is organic. The turkey is antibiotic free. It is fabulous. This stuff is great. And one thing that I have noticed, Dr. Jasek, is, you know, we preach this all the time, rotation, 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 variety, variety, variety.
Mm-hmm.
What this has revealed is that many pet parents are not rotating. They're not going away from their favorite blend. And this is sort of forcing them to try some different stuff. Our PMR blends, which I know that you love extra organs. These PMR blends have extra organs, a slightly higher bone count. They're wonderful. So I really would encourage my pet parents to get out there and try something new. Your dog, if they've been on a raw diet, it's not like switching donuts to donuts to donuts. They're going to be fine. If they have a looser stool for a couple of days, it will firm up. They're just getting used to something new. But if you're concerned about complete and balance, which everybody always asks me that question, is this complete and balance? Well, not if you feed the same thing for 2 years.
Right.
Right?
Right. It's a balance. It's a balance over time. And the balance comes from rotating as many different things into the diet as you can.
Oh, snap, snap, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.